Now or Never series by Tabry, read by Cookie Mom 6067. Part 1, Now or Never. Jensen knew what he needed to do. He couldn't let Cougar die. He just didn't want to let his friend go. If he did this, there was no going back for either of them. As far as anyone else would be concerned, Pooch would be the only surviving member of the losers, and maybe that was for the best. He wasn't going to let his best friend die. And besides, the Air Force owed him. He'd kept their little secret. He was calling in that marker. Plus, their chief scientist, a hot blonde to boot, had offered him a job and said it was open-ended, to say yes when he was ready. And she'd handed him a very small pouch and told him to use it only in an emergency. It really was now or never. He was ready, and it was definitely an emergency. He pulled the tiny device and special earbud communication piece from the pouch he always carried. He depressed the button and waited for the go-ahead. "Is there someone on high?" he asked. "Yes." "On my signal, 2. Medical will be needed." "Copy. On your signal. Medbay standing by." Jensen headed back into the room where he'd left Cougar. The sniper was trying to rewire the bomb with one hand while still holding his gun in his other. Jensen was just happy that Cougar didn't instantly pull the trigger when he reappeared in the room. That would have sucked. Cougar growled at him. "I told you to go." "And I told you I was getting help, you dumb shit," Jensen said, batting the injured man's hand away from the device. "Let me do this, and then we're out of here. And you better not bleed to death on me, or I'm going to be very pissed at you, man." Cougar growled again. "I called in a favor, and I know what you're going to say, and right now it's probably not thank you, but just be quiet while I do this." Jensen popped the side plate on the bomb, and then pulled out a wire and jammed it into a slot near the timer. Then he snipped another and twisted the end back on itself, before snipping 2 more and twisting both those pieces together. The timer flashed for a second, and then started counting down, starting at 20 seconds. "Time to go," he told Cougar, moving to crouch next to his friend. "Hold on to your hat, and I'll explain everything once you're out of surgery and conscious. Promise." Jensen touched the small communication device again and said, "Now, now, now." There was a flash of bright light, and the only thing left in the room was a bomb that was about to go off in 3, 2, 1. At about the same moment, Jensen and Cougar blinked open their eyes to find a man in a flight uniform standing over them. "Welcome to the Stargate program, gentlemen," he said, and then they were both being rushed off to the med bay. Part 2. Recovery. The first thing Cougar heard when he woke were noises he associated with hospitals, the quiet beeping and whirring of ventilators and machines. His sense of smell confirmed what his hearing was telling him, and he slowly tried to open his eyes. The lights were bright, but he was quite sure he wasn't in heaven or hell. It hadn't been a dream. What had Jensen done? When he finally got his eyes opened and mostly focused, he found himself on a bed in a hospital. No, more like a ship's medbay, like he'd never seen before. He'd also opened them just in time to see Jensen getting reprimanded by a nurse. Some things obviously didn't change, no matter where they were. "Get back in the bed, Mr. Jensen, or I will have a Marine come sit on you." "MP," Jensen responded, trying to dodge around the nurse. "I'm pretty sure he's a Marine," the nurse responded calmly. "If you don't get back in bed, your next shot will not be through the IV. Cougar saw Jensen pause. Nurses could be a scary bunch. "Corporal, get back in the bed for the nice nurse." Cougar's eyes flicked to an older man now standing a few feet away, the same man he'd seen after the flash of light. "But," Jensen tried to argue, "if Alvarez wakes up, I'm sure the nurses will let you know. And for the record, if a member of the med staff asks you if you are injured, the right answer is, yes, I've been shot. Not to run off at the mouth and pass out on the floor." Jensen walked backwards to his bed and hopped up on it, legs swinging like a little kid. "In my defense, General," he said mulishly, "I didn't know I'd been shot." Cougar saw the general shake his head and was almost positive there was an eye roll, too. He wondered just how long they had been wherever they were. "Right," the general said, drawing out the word. Cougar took that as a cue and tried to sit up. Spierto, he said quietly. And even to his own ears, that didn't sound right, so he tried again. Muake. Better, all in English. And the nurse that had been threatening Jensen was instantly there fixing his bed and pillows so he could sit up before moving to check his vitals. Cougs! And Jensen was trying to get off the bed. Stay. The general pointed at Jensen, but had turned to look at Cougar. Smiling where only Cougar could see, he continued to talk to Jensen. If you are a good little computer tech, maybe the nice nurse here will let you visit with your friend. Cougar grinned for a second before looking over at Jensen and giving his friend a small nod. Jensen seemed to take that as the sign that Cougar was okay and relaxed. General Jack O'Neill, the general announced. You've been here 2 days, and I'm betting you want to know where here really is. Cougar nodded while the nurse was shining a light in his eyes. We're on a spaceship, Jensen shouted happily from his bed before adding in a sad voice. But it belongs to the Air Force. This time Cougar could see the general roll his eyes. Technically, recently departed Corporal Jacob Jensen, it belongs to Stargate Command. But sure, the Air Force beat the Army into building spaceships. Fine. Jensen crossed his arms and pouted, and Cougar chuckled softly. You are on board the USS Apollo, and Jake is right, it's a spaceship. The general smiled. That still tickles me. You could say Jake once helped us with something, and we were in the right place at the right time to return the favor. But I checked you out, Carlos Alvarez. We tried recruiting you. You never returned our phone calls. The general waved the comment off before Cougar could say anything and continued. We're part of a program. Why didn't you say yes, Cougs? Jensen asked, and he was suddenly standing by his bed. I would have come with you. Spaceships, man. And you should see their tech. It's like a toy store and... What? You really can't stay put, can you? General O'Neill asked. No, Cougar responded and pointed to the stool next to his bed. Sit. Jensen sat. A look came over O'Neill's face, and Cougar got this feeling that the man at one time had been more than just a paper-pushing general. I'll make a deal with you, Jake. You stay seated right there, no talking or harassing the nurses, while Carlos and I chat, and I'll get Carter to give you one of our laptops to play with. Jensen looked like he wanted to bounce, but smiled and mimed zipping his lips shut and then sat on his hands. Cougar finally got a look at the bandage around Jensen's shoulder and ribs. He could see that Jensen wanted to tell him he was okay, but also didn't want to talk. The need for a computer stilling his hyper-friend's speech and movement. O'Neill was nice enough to answer for him. I have one of those, O'Neill said, a finger pointing in Jensen's direction. Cougar didn't exactly understand that and let the comment go as the general filled him in on Jensen's injuries. Bullet wound in the shoulder, not a through and through, 2 cracked ribs and shrapnel in his thigh. As for you, we had to bring up a specialist to help heal you. But if I understand Dr. Keller correctly, you should be out of here by tomorrow, but not cleared for duty. Cougar was sure he misunderstood. He still wasn't sure how he could even be sitting up. He clearly remembered being shot at least 3 times, and 2 of those had been in the chest. How? Aliens, O'Neill answered with a straight face. We have some of their tech. We use it in conjunction with good old Earth medicine. If you really want to know more, you can ask Keller. She'd love to fill you in. Cougar shook his head no. He fully believed that love translated into talk your ear off in medical jargon, and the only one he really didn't mind rambling on was Jake. He was alive. Jake was alive. The long medical drabble wasn't really needed. Max? He asked instead. Both of them are confirmed dead, O'Neill replied. He, they, whatever, have been a pain in our asses for a while. He nearly brought one of our ships crashing to Earth, so thanks for getting rid of him. Now as for the two of you, you're both dead. Officially, Sergeant Carlos Alvarez and Corporal Jacob Jensen died during a CIA operation. We've created new identities for you, but that means you really can't return to Earth, at least anytime soon. For now, you are civilian contractors with the SGC, and I have the perfect galaxy to send you to. The general was interrupted when a brown-haired man with glasses came into the curtained-off areas. Jack, he said. Daniel, you're supposed to be overseeing the IOA committee. So I am. You're late, Daniel said. Almost an hour late. So I am. Jack. Fine, Daniel. Give me a minute to finish up here with our two new recruits. And I already okayed your trip to Atlantis, so stop with that look. Cougar now understood O'Neill's earlier comment. But Atlantis? The city that sunk? Cougar was beginning to think maybe the meds were messing with his mind. There's some videos for you to watch. It'll give you a rundown on the program. Lots and lots of forms for you to sign. I'll even squeeze in an official tour. And O'Neill shot Jensen a look of the ship. I'll come back by tomorrow afternoon before you get sprung. Cougar realized that Jensen hadn't spoken for a while and looked over at his friend. He saw Jensen grin and nod his head. Thank you, sir. Jake, I will get you your computer, but behave. Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. I will keep him with me, Cougar reassured the general. That's not as reassuring as you think it is. But O'Neill shrugged and began ushering Daniel out with him. That's Dr. Daniel Jackson, Jensen said. He discovered how to operate the Stargate. Big ring thing that generates a wormhole they also use to travel to different planets and talk to their first alien contact and is like a kick-ass archaeologist or something. Cougar raised an eyebrow. I hacked their system a few years back. Mostly. Almost hacked it. They have some very tough security protocols. Are we truly on a spaceship, Jake? Cougar asked, feeling like he was in some weird dream. Oh, yeah, man. I snuck out of here and wandered around the ship after you came out of recovery. They have some really cool weapons. They even have these little space fighter planes. Pooch would have loved those. And you can see Earth from the big window in the mess hall. We can sneak down there later if they unhook you from all the extra sensors. Are we prisoners? Nope, Jensen grinned. And no longer in the military, either. Do you want to stay with these people? Jensen nodded his head and smiled even more. Yeah, they tried to recruit me after the hack, but the losers, and you guys, were my family. I didn't want to just disappear on you. There's an alien on this ship. Do you want to go back? Jensen asked, his smile slipping from his face. No. Here with you is good. Part 3. Understanding. The nurse handed Cougar a small device that looked a little like a spinning top. It lit up faintly. The nurse nodded and then handed it to Jensen. The device lit up brighter than it had for Cougar. The nurse smiled and tapped her med tablet with a stylus before walking away. What do you think that was about? Cougar shrugged. Jensen watched the nurse retreat back to her station before beginning to tell Cougar everything he could remember about the layout of the Apollo. He was pouring both him and Cougar a glass of water when a Marine, so the nurse had been correct, and Jensen wrinkled his nose, handed him 3 DVDs before pushing a button on the wall that lowered a small flat-screen television near Cougar's bed. Jensen slid the DVD labeled Volume 1 into the slot and hit play. Dr. Jackson appeared on the screen, smiling, standing in front of a large metal circle. Hello, I am Dr. Daniel Jackson. Behind me is a Stargate. It was originally built millennia ago by an alien race that we call the Ancients. Over the next few hours, we'll be touching on... Did he just say hours? Jensen asked. Do you think that's just for this DVD or for all of them? Cougar shushed him, and they both listened as the archaeologist explained where the gate had come from, where it was found, what the symbols meant. Whoa, hold up. Jensen jumped up from his seat and pushed a couple buttons on the side of the television so he could replay the scene, showing the Stargate in action. Jackson's voice picked up in mid-sentence. When a connection is made between two Stargates, an unstable energy vortex emerges from the gate and settles into the event horizon, or puddle, as we like to call it. Later, it was discovered that an eighth symbol would actually dial another galaxy hundreds of thousands of light years away via an interstellar wormhole, but more on that later. As Daniel Jackson continued to speak, Jensen leaned in and got so caught up with what he was learning that almost everything else dropped away. He continued to nod, comment, or answer Cougar, but other than that, it was all about the knowledge that was just hinted at in the speech Jackson was giving and the tech that glinted in some of the footage. Some point during the second DVD, lunch trays were brought in, eaten, and cleared, all without comment. Then came the two folders with their names and the words "Top Secret" stamped in red across the front. They were each nearly an inch thick and contained regulations and non-disclosure document after document. They paused the DVD long enough to skim through the documents, initialed and signed where needed. Jensen wasn't 100% sure he hadn't just signed his life and Cougar's hat away to the Stargate program. The third DVD started with Daniel Jackson saying, "Dialing the gate with the eighth symbol engaged has given us the chance to explore the Pegasus Galaxy, where we found the sunken city of Atlantis and one of the early homes of the ancients, the Gate Builders. Like in the Milky Way, we have made friends and found new enemies." The first images were of what was clearly a Stargate, but the rings didn't move and the gate seemed cleaner, brighter to Jensen. The images cut to footage obviously taken from a ship coming in for a landing. It circled a beautiful city of glass and tall buildings, cut to more scenes of labs and technology, all while Jackson unfolded the mission that was Atlantis. Atlantis is the size of a small city, and at the time of this recording, housed more than 500 military and civilian contractors from at least seven nations, Jackson said, while walking up a blue-lit set of stairs. The overview of the Atlantis mission continued, including images and videos of the native populations. Then Jackson began describing the Wraith, and Jensen tilted his head at the screen, not totally believing what he was seeing, even as a Scottish voice started describing the biology of the Wraith. "Is that Marilyn Manson?" "Jake," Cougar said, in what Jake always took as Cougar's "shush, this is important" voice. "I'm serious, Cougar. I mean, okay, the teeth and the vampire hand aside, but the long leather coat, white hair, pale skin, and okay, that's just gross. How exactly do you kill those things? I mean, they fired an entire clip from a P-90 into it, and it got up. Jake." Jake rewound the section and sat quietly as the voiceover given by the Scottish doctor was repeated. When the doctor was finished with his voiceover, Jake stopped the DVD. Cougar just raised an eyebrow at him and waited for him to continue. "So, we might have alien DNA because I'm pretty sure that's what the nurse was testing with that top thingy earlier. And there are space vampires, and we could die." Jake crossed his arms over his chest. "But spaceships, Atlantis and aliens. But I'm not sorry I brought you here because they saved your life. And you can play your little duck hunt snipe game with the evil space vampires who apparently live on our life force. You're not mad, are you?"
"No."
"No?" Cougar shook his head, and without the hat, Jake could see the other man roll his eyes.
"We are both alive," Cougar said softly. "Everything else we can deal with together."
The clearing of a throat had them both glancing towards a short man with glasses and wild-looking hair who was carrying two laptops with the Atlantis emblem on the top. "Dr. Zelenka," Jake greeted. Zelenka gave him a perplexed look until the scientist noticed the video frozen on the television screen. "Ah, yes, I see. Those new Welcome to the Stargate program DVDs. Forgot I was in there. These are for you, he said, handing them each a laptop. Laptop will get you access to Atlantis and SGC network. Basic needs are on toolbar. Configure as you wish. Zelenka straightened his glasses before continuing. Mr. Jensen will be reporting to me and Dr. Miko Kusanagi when not involved on field missions. She will be your advisor to finish your doctorate. Jake's fingers, that had been stroking the top of the laptop, froze. Huh? What? In papers you signed, Zelenka grinned. General is clever, man. Keep the packing to a minimum. Cougar chuckled. Field missions and team assignments are normally handled by Major Lorne, and he seems quite giddy to be getting a sniper of your caliber, Mr. Alvarez.
Just Alvarez, or Cougar.
Cougar quietly commented. Zelenka nodded. We've also been told you have ear for languages and read Latin. The linguists will flock to you. Cougar made a face, and Jake laughed. Before anyone else could continue, the nurse appeared for evening rounds and sent Jake back to his bed, while Zelenka fled on his own without being told. Wounds were inspected and bandages changed. The nurse backed up a few steps and stood between the two beds, so both occupants could see her. Your dinner will be here in 15 minutes. Stay in bed or computers are gone. Understood?
Yes, ma'am,
they both answered. And Jake hugged the computer closer to himself. He had no plans of willingly letting this one go. Dinner wasn't bad. The food was definitely better than what Jake had eaten on base, even if the mashed potatoes had been purple, which honestly he thought was cool, especially when he found out they were from the Pegasus Galaxy. They finished the DVD, which gave them a quick rundown of the chain of command and let them put faces to names and voices they had seen and heard throughout the DVDs. Cougar dozed while Jake busied himself with his laptop. There was an email from a Sergeant Harriman informing him that he had been given an advance on his salary and issued a bank card. If he wished to order anything to take with him to Atlantis, civilian clothing, books, glasses, etc., he could do so now and have them shipped express to the routing address used by Atlantis personnel. That was about when it fully hit Jake that he and Cougar were really starting over. Their old lives were gone, and the only things they had were what they beamed aboard with. Jake wondered if Cougar had seen the email, as that had been the last program Jake had opened, even though the icon said he had new mail. Jake had been all about checking the specs on the machine and setting things up how he liked, whereas Cougar had only used his old laptop to check email and fill out after-action reports, which was probably all he'd use the new one for as well. "Cougs," he said quietly. Cougar turned his head but didn't open his eyes.
"Go to sleep, Jake. You can think geek tomorrow."
Jake grinned and closed the lid on the laptop. Cougar knew him so well, and for that, Jake was very grateful. Part 4. Travel. Carlos Alvarez was not letting any of the geeks on this ship know he actually understood more of the math and physics they batted back and forth than he needed to. It had taken him 2 days to convince the red-haired linguist that he was, number one, not interested in joining them in their bid to take over Atlantis, and, number two, not interested in having an affair with him. That hadn't stopped the British woman, who just got up from the table he was sharing with Dr. Zelenka and Jake, from trying to pick him up. That wasn't the first time a man had come on to him, but it was a first while on a military vessel. No one around had batted an eye, not even the Marine that had passed them in the hallway. And now he was beginning to understand Jake's earlier rant about the weird military behavior. That was until he finally read through all the regulations for the SGC and Atlantis base, which had a secondary set of regulations, as it was both multinational and civilian run. It seemed reminding them that Daniel Jackson was on board and down on the science deck often got them to turn around and scuttle off towards their High King, Jensen's name for Daniel. Cougar just never mentioned that O'Neill was also in the lab doing paperwork, and he just hoped that having to figure out a way around the general kept them busy and away from him for the rest of the trip. He moved his night, and prayed that the little Czech scientist ignore the open rook and took the bishop instead. Cougar was still on desk duty for another couple of days, but the doctor was positive he would be back to full strength before the Apollo was in orbit around Atlantis in another 2 weeks.
Are they all so?
And he wasn't even sure how to finish that question about the linguist who had just left the table. Zelenka chuckled. You are trying to distract, but I will let you keep your rook for now. There is sometimes battle of sorts among the soft and hard sciences on Atlantis. You are free agent. This is all Rodney's fault. Zelenka shrugged. Sometimes battle is geek versus military. Just by the grin on Zelenka's face, he figured it was all good natured fun, but that the military did not come out on top in all the little tiffs. And he didn't have a hard time believing that. Jake was a geek at heart, a geek with tons of military skills, but when someone pissed Jake off, he went after them geek style. Their credit score would drop, and if he was really pissed, a car would get repossessed. He even put a senator on the no-fly list. Not that Cougar would ever admit to knowing any of this. Cougar did not want to think about what could happen on a city like Atlantis. Also, Zelenka was one hell of a chess player. Perhaps you should stay neutral like Colonel. Thanks to the after-action reports and the information Jake was able to acquire to fill in the blanks and the information he'd picked up from other people's conversations, he knew several things about Lieutenant Colonel John Shepard. Not the least of which was the fact that, had he been in the Army instead of the Air Force, Shepard could easily have been a loser. And that was something Cougar actually found a little scary. Major Lorne sidestepped around an anthropologist heading toward their table and snagged the fourth chair at the table. Cougar mentally gave the major 2 points for making the move look natural and another for keeping the geek at bay. For an Air Force officer, Cougar liked Lorne. And like Shepard, Lorne's military jacket was filled with loser-quality missions. It made Cougar question the sanity of the people involved in the Stargate program. But it hadn't, at least not yet, made him question his own sanity for agreeing to become part of it. He figured it was Jake's excitement rubbing off on him. "What is Shepard neutral on?" Lorne asks. "Grunts versus geeks," Lorne snorted. "He only stays out of it because he'd be at home on either side, and it's good mostly for morale." Cougar chuckled softly. He knew Lorne himself had a degree in geology, and that there was a botanist on his gate team as well. Cougar had also seen the painting of 302s in flight, thanks to Jake, so he knew his new XO liked to paint. Definitely the most grounded CO or XO he'd ever had. Lorne changed the subject with a smile. "I see Jensen got his packages." Within 60 hours of him and Jensen signing their paperwork and placing orders, they'd received everything they had asked for and a few things they hadn't. They now had the standard Atlantis-based uniforms, including several used for field missions, and a new set of dog tags. Everyone on Atlantis wore them, and after having seen what the Wraith could do to a person, Cougar could thoroughly understand the reason behind that rule. There had also been a delivery of 3 SR-25s. Lorne had told him those were his, and that there was another 6 for Atlantis' armory. When the guns had arrived at the quarters he was sharing with Jake, he admitted that he felt instantly better having something that was his, like Jake and his computer. Then Jake had made it better when his friend had unwrapped something he'd taken from the drawer under his bunk and handed it to him. It was his favorite scope. The one off the rifle he'd taken on board the drilling platform. He wasn't sure when or how Jake had gotten it, but he had smiled and thanked his friend. He tore down all 3 of the SR-25s, checking for weight, defects, and feel, all before cleaning and reassembling the parts into 2 complete weapons and a pile of spare parts that could be used to repair either his weapons or the other 6. All that was left to do was to test them both to see which would be his primary. Lorne had apparently figured that would be needed and had managed to talk Colonel Ellis into letting them use the center strip of space in the starboard hangar bay, which meant if any of the 302s in the bay were damaged, Atlantis would be losing one of their new fleet of fighters. The bay hadn't given Cougar distance, but it had shown how each gun would handle. He'd switched out the scopes and tested again until he had been satisfied with the current configurations. It had been a nice break from desk duty that no one was going to mention to the medical staff. Cougar looked over at Jake and the special package that had arrived along with all the others and smiled. Jake had the headphones from an iPod plugged into his ears, two big books open, his laptop and a notepad spread out in front of him, and was scribbling like mad. Jake had gotten the clothes, coffee, candy, and electronics he had ordered, as well as homework from Dr. Kusanagi that she expected done by the time Jake arrived on Atlantis.
"Yes," he said, "this is almost the quietest and stillest I've ever seen him."
Lorne grinned. "Savor it now. Atlantis will keep you on your toes." "There is Bet going," Zelenka commented, taking one of Cougar's pawns from the board.
"There is always a bet going," Lorne seemed to remind Zelenka.
"This is true. This bet involves Jake and Rudney, and how long before Rudney explodes?"
Cougar watched as Lorne nearly choked on a piece of chicken. "You couldn't have waited until I swallowed, Doc."
"Where is fun in that?"
Lorne shook his head.
"We haven't even made it home yet."
Zelenka grinned.
"I know. We've determined it will be within hours of the meeting. It will be spectacular and check."
Cougar looked down at the board.
Sure enough, he was in check, with limited options of getting his king to safety, and maybe only one that didn't end with a checkmate within two moves. He tilted his king to lay on the board and said,
"Good game."
"You too."
Zelenka bobbed his head in agreement while packing up the chessboard. "I must return to engineering."
When Zelenka was out of earshot, Lorne informed him that Zelenka was the reigning chess champion on Atlantis and that he normally played two or three games at once during some of the bartering meets. Chess for chocolate and coffee was a big event, especially if Zelenka was playing for you and not against you.
"I will keep that in mind."
"What's in the betting pool, and what do I have to do to make McKay explode?" Jake asked, proving that he was aware of and listening to his surroundings, even while doing his homework.
Lorne raised an eyebrow. "We'll catch you in for 25% on top of your own winnings," Jake whispered.
Cougar tilted his chin.
"We?"
"Well, I can't very well place my own bet now, can I? So yes, we."
Lorne shrugged.
"Actually, it's pretty easy to set McKay off on a rant. Don't get me wrong. I like the man, but he can be a bit of an ass, even if he and Doc Z have pulled our asses out of the fire multiple times. Not being an anthropologist or any of the other soft sciences means you won't be able to use that card. To be honest, by the time we get to Atlantis, McKay will know everything about you from your files. If you know anything about comics, that would be the way to go."
Jake bounced. "Excellent! That I can do."
"Jake," Cougar said, pointing back to the books.
"Right, right. Homework first, planning later."
Part 5. Arrival. Jake was ready. They'd had a plan and then tossed it out, instead opting for a completely different thing they were calling Option B. It would be better than Plan A. All his thoughts of plans and options went to the back of Jake's mind, mostly, when he was beamed down to Atlantis. If his backpack hadn't been hooked around his shoulder, he would have dropped it. He stood there like all the other newbies to Atlantis, mouth hung open and speechless. The pictures had not given him even a tenth of what the city really was all about. This place was so shiny. It was geek mecca. It was beautiful. And that ancient gene the nurse had been so happy about was almost itching. Jake wanted to reach out and pet the walls. This was going to be fun. Cougar's soft chuckle broke him out of his "I'm in geek heaven" thoughts.
"Shall we try this again?" Lorne said, grinning.
"Colonel Shepard, Dr. McKay, this is Jake Jensen and Carlos Alvarez, two of our new civilian contractors." And even Jake could hear the quotes around the word civilian. "Miko's new project / the almost successful hacker." McKay gave him a once-over, glared at the black shirt with a bright glowing arc reactor in the chest for a second before shrugging.
Nice shirt. Jake grinned and shoved his hands into his pockets, rocking back on his heels. Thanks. Would have broken through had Dr. K's program not trapped me in that quadrant. Came up with a workaround, should that ever happen again. He halted and shrugged. He'd already sent Dr. Kusanagi the workaround and figured he'd be getting another homework assignment of building a fix for it. McKay raised an eyebrow. You'll be getting more homework then. Don't make her cry. McKay, Shepard admonished. What? You made her cry the other day. McKay glared. I did not. Did I? No, wait, I didn't. I made the herbist biologist, he waved his hand around, whatever that new guy is, cry. But he was being stupid. I saw Mika laughing in that polite, quiet manner of hers. Jake was almost positive the colonel had just rolled his eyes at McKay's response before asking his next question, which, if Jake was right, Shepard knew it would set McKay off again. Parrish's new person? No, though I don't know his name either, and he's not going to make it here very long, because seriously, Miko made that man cry. How is it that Parrish is the only one in botany with a backbone? McKay turned to glare at Lorne. That you're doing? Lorne grinned. How about I get these guys settled, sir? Then maybe Cougar here will give you a demonstration of our new acquisitions, Lorne asked, avoiding McKay's question. The general and Dr. Jackson are in the next group, he added. Go away, Lorne, Shepard responded, grinning. The putting alcove in 2 hours. Jake didn't know what that meant exactly, but followed Lorne through the corridors and into what looked like an elevator. There was a brief flash of light, and when the doors opened, they were in another corridor. This one had plants and couches in a small niche by the transporter and doors at regular intervals on either side of the hall. Transporters, Jake said, bouncing on his toes. This place totally rocks. They were in the video, Cougar reminded him, and we've already done the whole beaming thing twice. Jake spun on his heel to stare at Cougar. You are downgrading my geek high. Stop. Cougar chuckled and stepped around him to continue after Lorne. Jake followed but glanced at the small electronic nameplates by all the doors. Most had only one name, and none seemed to have more than two. He and Cougar had been asked if they wanted separate quarters, but they'd both answered no at the same time, so it wasn't a surprise to see their names on the same plate. It was a surprise to see that Dr. K was just down the hall from them. Lorne opened the door and then showed them how to lock the entrance to just themselves. Your things should be here within 20, and I'll swing by in 90 for the little demo. I'm hoping to get a reaction out of Ronan, who has not been all that impressed with Earth weaponry, Lorne said, acknowledging the case that Cougar had beamed down with. Jake looked around their quarters. It was huge. Thank you, he heard Cougar say, followed by Lorne's quiet chuckle before the doors softly swished shut. The two of them had been comfortable in the tiny quarters on the Apollo. This was like sharing a luxury suite at a hotel or something. The room was portioned simply by the way the furniture was arranged. There was a small sofa, a coffee table, and a chair immediately to the left of the door, while to the right there were two desks. Just past the desk was a small table with two chairs. The back half of the room was filled with typical bedroom furniture, just multiplied by two. There was a door on the left wall he guessed led to a bathroom, and a large stained glass window on the right. Cougar's only request for their quarters was to have a window. Though the stained glass didn't let them look out, it did keep the amount of natural light down to a livable level. Too bad we can't see out, Jensen said. Before he'd finished his thought, the colored glass cleared. Holy shit, Cougs! Did you see that? Yes. Jake noticed a seam running down the glass that he had not spotted before, and a clear panel to the side of glass. He took a step closer and waved his hand over the panel. The glass parted. Cougs? It looks like Lorne scored you a balcony. I mean, the view is mostly just another one of the towers, but balcony? Jake stepped out of the balcony in time to see one of the puddle jumpers fly around the towers to a lower level and disappear. Spaceships, he whispered in awe again. Awesome. Cougar stepped out onto the balcony next to him,
and tilted his head up towards the sky for a moment before opening his hand to reveal an earpiece.
"It is coded for you," Cougar said quietly.
He took the headset and looked at it closely, examining each side. Cougar lifted his other hand to reveal a post-it note that said, "Mr. Jensen, please do not take apart. One in lab for you to do so. Dr. Kusanagi." Jake huffed, but put the piece in his ear. He heard a soft click as it activated, and then nothing. It was super light, and he could barely feel it.
"Cool."
"Yes." And Jake could hear the amusement in Cougar's voice. The chime for the door sounded, and both walked back into their quarters. Jake waved his hand over the panel and thought the glass looked to be colored again. He looked over his shoulder and grinned. The city was amazing, and he wasn't ever going to get over that fact. They had followed Lorne to one of the outlying towers and an alcove that faced out into the ocean. There were buckets of golf balls and several golf clubs. That's when Jake got it. Putting area actually meant just that.
"How do you get the golf balls back?"
"O'Neill sent us special golf balls. They float, and one of the jumpers skims the surface for them. Unless one of the SEAL teams pisses off the colonel, and then there's normally a special training session that involves them swimming out to retrieve them." Lauren handed Jake a pair of binoculars and hit a button on a small laptop. "You can see them floating out around the distance markers that are coming out of the water now." They didn't want the markers leading an enemy ship to the city when it cloaked. "I had the crew go out and add a few more. Half a mile or so distant is the furthest," Lorne added. "The orange centers will explode when your bullet connects with the target." Jake watched as Cougar opened the rifle case and took out the unattached scope before stepping out onto the ledge. He wasn't sure what Cougar saw or felt when he scoped out targets, just that it worked. Cougar stepped back and nodded at Lorne before kneeling to assemble his rifle. The silencer was twisted on just as Shepard and Ronan entered the alcove.
"Any particular position or order?" Cougar asked.
"Nah," Shepard responded. "Just show us what has Lorne all excited." Cougar knelt on the floor with one leg up, picked up his rifle and aimed. Less than 5 minutes later, with only 8 shots fired, all 7 targets had exploded.
"Quieter than your other guns," Ronan said. "Nice range, too."
Lorne grinned, and Jake could see the man controlling the unprofessional urge to bounce on his feet. Shepard was nodding his head. "Park you in a tree near the gate to provide cover. Can you take out a flying vehicle?"
"If I know what to shoot," was Cougar's answer.
Then Atlantis was plunged into darkness as all but emergency systems shut down.
"Colonel," Zelenka said calmly over the comms, "Rodney and Daniel have broken city again."
We have not,
came the dual response.
"You are locked in room with controls, yes?"
There was silence.
"Controls no longer work, yes?"
Shepard interrupted them before the argument could get out of hand and asked,
"I'm on my way to where exactly?"
"Tower 5, subfloor 2.
"Copy.
We're on our way. And someone find the general. He was going fishing out on one of the piers," Shepard ordered.
"And gentlemen," Shepard said, glancing back to Jake and Cougar when he got to the door, "welcome to Atlantis."
Part 6. Home. Cougar and Jake spent the first 3 months on Atlantis learning about the city ship, the ancients, and the Pegasus Galaxy, the natives, and the other people on the city. The DVDs could only prepare you or tell you so much. The rest you had to discover on your own. The pink potatoes and the slightly purple-colored chicken turkey bird thing, which was about as pretty as a normal turkey but 3 times the size, all took a little getting used to. But as Jake had told him once, points to the cooks for making delicious meals. He had been through the kitchens on one of his many midnight hunts for Jake, who got lost in his homework and forgot that sleep was needed. Cougar had seen the storage closet filled with spices and dry ingredients that the kitchen kept in case Atlanta should ever be cut off from Earth again. He was a firm believer in being prepared for anything, and whoever maintained the kitchen believed the same thing, if the labels and the rotation and stacking of the supplies was anything to go by. Once he and Jake had settled into life on the alien city, something they both did far easier than Cougar had thought they would, Lauren started assigning them to gate missions. Simple ones at first. Those all going so smoothly that both he and Jake didn't know what to do or think. There had been no unexpected bad guys, no bombs, no explosions of any kind, and no chasing of them or anyone else for that matter. It had been a relaxing change of pace that had them both freaking out slightly. Him a little more than Jake, as Jake was still freaking out about having to go back to school. Cougar still chuckled at that thought. Mission number 4 had been more like it. Excitement, explosions, an ambush by Wraith worshippers, and a mad dash to the gate to avoid the incoming Wraith cruiser. Cougar didn't like Wraith worshippers, and when he thought about them, he was positive he despised them more than the Wraith themselves. Selling out a planet to keep their youth and lives made them whatever the crap was that medical had scraped off the bottom of his boot. They had kept his boots, and he had just gotten those broken in, too. But it did go a long way to explaining why he'd been issued 4 pairs. Mission number 5 had been made for Jake, an underground temple filled with ancient, very dusty technology, most of it in working order, most of it medical and science equipment. It had been geek nirvana. Then they'd found a ZPM. It wasn't quite a quarter full, but a ZPM was a ZPM. Cougar was positive he'd seen happy dances from about 12 different people, including Jake. The new technology and power meant the scientists were even busier than normal. Cougar knew that Jake had hoped that meant Dr. Kusanagi would lighten his academic load and let him play with the new stuff. It hadn't. Jake was clipping along with his studying and thesis paper under the watchful eye of the quiet Japanese woman. Cougar would not admit this to anyone, but the geeks on Atlantis, especially Zelenko, McKay, and Kusanagi, scared him a little. The things the three of them could do. He had thought Jake dangerous with a laptop and an internet connection. Now he was in and around labs with the other three. It was better left not thought about, or there could be more weird nightmares. Several missions later, Cougar took out a Wraith dart with his rifle. It allowed AR-1 and about 20 children and teens to make a safe retreat through the gate. Saving the children had lifted some weight off of he and Jake that neither man had realized they were still carrying, and it had felt good to take out something that big with a single lucky shot from his rifle. Ronan had asked him about his SR-25 a few days after that mission, its range, weight, distance, everything. It was apparently the first time Ronan had ever taken a real interest in Earth weapons. Cougar found the younger man to be a good student. He was quiet, a little wild, but Cougar could see the soldier the other man had been before the Wraith had attacked. While Ronan had the patience to learn about and how to use the SR-25 and a few other Earth weapons, it was obvious that Ronan didn't have the patience to be a sniper when it came to the Wraith. Cougar could understand that, understand the younger man's drive to be right in the middle of the action. He also knew what he did, being a sniper, was not a skill many wanted. But if asked, he would teach. In exchange, Ronan let him test out his particle magnum gun. Cougar had wanted one almost immediately after firing the first shot. He'd even asked if there was a long-range version of the gun. There had been, but Ronan believed the accuracy and distance wouldn't match that of his Earth weapon, but promised to keep an eye out for one, should they ever come across a stash of Satidan weapons. "You two going to shoot at the little bobbly targets all day?" Jake asked, stopping several feet behind Cougar and Ronan's crouched positions on the firing range and breaking the quiet of Cougar's thoughts. "Or do you plan on eating dinner?" Jake finished. Both men glanced down at their wrists. Cougar was normally better at keeping track of time, though he was still getting used to the 27-hour day and how that worked with reporting back to Earth. "Dinner," Cougar answered, already tearing down his gun, before turning in Ronan's direction to ask, "Would you like to join us?" "Nah," the other man answered, popping up to his feet in one very quick and smooth motion. "Time to bother McKay." Cougar grinned while Jake laughed. "We're on the schedule if we want to get to Earth," Jake said, tossing his jacket towards his desk and walking over to the small couch where Cougar was stretched out reading from his tablet. "I guess O'Neill's at least any time soon is here, or someone forgot," Jake said, recalling something the general had said more than a year ago when Cougar was still recovering aboard the Apollo. Jake hadn't even realized they'd been on Atlantis for more than a year until he'd seen the schedule at lunch. He really had nothing to go back for. He had no family, and officially he was dead. Everything he wanted came in the shipments from Earth. He had a stockpile of coffee, candy, and salt and vinegar potato chips to last. Well, that was beside the point. Plus, Cougar had his own stockpile of candy and health food. No, there was nothing he really needed to go to Earth for that he couldn't have shipped out here. But Cougar still had family, though they thought he was dead. He might want to just go and get a glimpse of them. Then again, there was a chance Aisha was still alive, and that would put his family at risk if he was spotted, and Cougar wouldn't risk that.
"You are overthinking," Cougar said quietly, putting down his tablet.
Jake shrugged. That had always been a common problem of his, when he wasn't sure what he wanted. He dropped down into the chair next to the sofa and chewed at his lip for a second. "Want to go back to Earth?" he asked, trying to sound cheerful, but not for a second believing he had pulled it off.
"No."
"No?" Cougar sat up and gave his head a small shake that yet again indicated a negative response. Jake waited a few minutes, but there was no explanation.
"Use your words, man," Jake responded to the silence. "I mean, I'm normally pretty good at getting your nonverbal answers, but we haven't talked about going back to Earth since we...
well, since we left Earth."
"You don't call it home," came Cougar's response.
"Huh?" Jake was lost. What did that have to do with whether or not Cougar wanted to visit Earth or see his family? Cougar chuckled softly.
"You don't call Earth home, Jake. You always call here," and Cougar pointed to the floor, "Atlantis home, or this room, if we are already on the city. You called our quarters home when I had to spend 2 days under the ever-watchful eyes of Dr. Carson.
That was totally unfair. You had to stay in medbay because of some little purple flower."
Though Jake counted himself lucky that he hadn't touched the flower, because the hives everyone had looked itchy and unpleasant, and he was feeling the need to scratch even now.
"You call this place home," Cougar continued. "This is home. But I told you then that here with you is good. That has not changed." Cougar moved over and took his hand. "You are my family. Understand?"
Jake nodded his head, letting Cougar's words sink in. "Here with you is home," he finally said and smiled. They were where they were supposed to be. Home. Atlantis. Together. The end.